Now, to his friends and family, 22-year-old Alan O'Mara was living the dream. But beneath the surface, the young Cavan GAA goalkeeper was caught in a nightmare world from which he could see no way out. Battling with depression, he felt trapped, alone, even considered taking his own life. He has bravely penned this story so that others might reach out, and he's with us now. Alan, good morning to you.
Good morning, Stephen. Thanks for having me.
Good morning. It's lovely to talk to you, Alan. I've just made a documentary on depression a couple of weeks ago. It was broadcast on BBC Northern Ireland, and what we were trying to do was to break down the stigma and to explain to people, first of all, that depression actually exists, because unbelievably, Alan, there are still people to this day that think it's a made-up illness. It's incredible.
Yeah, I suppose it is something that can be hard to explain to people that haven't gone through it, or maybe haven't been affected by it directly or indirectly, but having gone through the process that I've gone through over the past maybe 2 years, 18 months, I know from my point of view that it exists out there.
What happened, Alan? Can you explain how you were feeling? Has this been with you for a long time?
No, I suppose I would have got to an All-Ireland under-21 final with Cavan in 2011. And, that was just it was quite a journey, and it's one that will stick with me for the rest of my life, I suppose. But in the aftermath of that, we were beaten in Croke Park here. And just over the following months after that, I was just gradually slipping and slipping down and down into a state of depression. And it got to a point where, as I outlined in the article, that I genuinely considered taking my own life. It was just sort of snowballed down and down. I just didn't really know what was going on around me, or I didn't understand the feelings that I was having, you know. And it just sort of it came to a head then. It was around December of 2011 where I hit that bottom point.
And before you got to that point, you were aware something was wrong. You could feel it inside you.
Yeah, I knew something was there, but I didn't know what it was, or I sort of was. I suppose the best way to describe it is I sort of felt like I just had this separate voice in my head, and it was just sort of, I was having internal conversations all the time. I stopped sleeping then, so you're lying awake at night looking at a roof, sort of listening to what I call now, it was sort of the good and bad voice in your head, you know. And just over time, that negative voice just became more and more prominent in my head, and it just took me a couple of months to sort of to gather what was going on and to start to understand what I was going through.
What did you think you were going through?
At the time, I didn't know. I mean, for a while, I just thought that I just lost my motivation, and I'd hate myself even more for lying in bed. And once I eventually took the step to reach out for help, I went through a good education process. I learned a lot about myself. I learned a lot about depression in general. And that was quite an enlightening experience for me.
And you were lying in bed for long periods of the day. How did the illness manifest itself physically with you?
I was just like, I lost the motivation to get out of bed. I was just lying in bed for weeks. The only time I'd sort of get out of bed would be if I was going out on the beer. And the alcohol with depression itself, it ended up becoming, you sort of feel like you're taking one step forward because you get that sort of immediate confidence boost, whatever you want to call it, from the alcohol. But I'd wake up the next day and you were two or three steps back. And if you repeat that over and over again, you're slipping further and further down. And I just ended up in a not so good place, you know.
And you hit a low point, you say, in December.
Yeah. I was playing a challenge game at my college. It was DIT. And I'd been feeling quite bad in the run to that. I hadn't really slept the night before. And I was standing there playing the game, and I had tears in my eyes. And I was just looking out the game, just thinking, I don't want to be here. I genuinely just wanted a hole to open up the ground and swallow me. And so eventually the game is over, and I said, I haven't slept the night before, and I'm hitting the road home. I'm heading home to Cavan, and I'm on the motorway, and just that voice is just at me in my head again. It's talking at me. It's just sort of, you're sort of just questioning your existence all the time. And as I'm driving home, I had a visualization of just crashing my car straight into the concrete wall on the side of the motorway, just because I literally couldn't get I just felt I couldn't get that voice to be quiet anymore. It had just been at me and at me for weeks and months. And as I said, I closed my eyes and I genuinely imagined my car hitting the wall. But that visualisation was quickly followed by sort of my mum and dad standing at my own funeral in a church. So thankfully that sort of hit home with me, and it snapped me out of the mood, I suppose. Or not snapped me out of it, but it just sort of made me think about what was going on for a second. And I just knew at that point that something is really, really not right here. And so at the time, I put down the window on the motorway, and I let the fresh air rush in and hit me face. And eventually I got home, and I opened up a little bit to Mam, and she that got me going in the right direction towards, I went towards the professional help, you know.
Was there any, did it feel like there was any logic to this voice in your head telling you to die? Like, was there a reason, or was it, you know, could you work out a reason in your head, or was there just this overwhelming sense?
No, like as I said, it just took me. I just didn't understand why and when it became so. I couldn't remember when it became so prominent. I didn't understand why, but there was no doubt. There was no doubt that it was there. And at the time, I can only describe it as sort of these internal conversations. And basically, the bad voice was starting to be heard a lot more than the good, you know. But yeah, like it's just it's confusing at the time when you're going through it, first of all, and you're not aware of it, or you don't understand it. But so thankfully, through the services that I've got and the road I went down, that I've got a better grip, and I sort of understand myself more and understand it in general.
And for other people who I've spoken to, they've talked to me about the relentless nature of this, that it's nearly as if your brain cannot stop, cannot calm down.
Yeah, I can't. I just felt my brain was just going at 100 miles an hour all the time. When it came to trying to sleep at night, it was as if thoughts were just racing and bouncing around your head. And I just got, you basically feel like you can't switch off. And the harder you want to switch off and just go to sleep forever, but there's just thoughts, and you could be thinking about anything. There's this voice in your head, and you're just talking and talking and talking. And you basically just feel like you can't shut off, and you can't quiet it down. And especially I just found it very. It hit me worse at night time when you're trying to sleep, and if you're living with friends and they're all asleep and you're just lying, looking at a ceiling, and you're basically talking to yourself. It's very confusing at the time when you're going through it, you know.
Were you afraid of speaking out? Were you afraid of people around you knowing? Because it's a macho world, isn't it? Any sport,
yeah.
And you're playing GAA. It's a macho world. Were you frightened of the reaction?
Initially I just kept it all to myself, and it was it wasn't that I was afraid to speak out, but initially I genuinely just didn't understand what I was going through, and I was just trying to get a grip on it. But there is that stigma there involved with it, and it is that you sort of. I remember I was picking up the phone to ring the GPA counselling service, which is the route I chose to go down. And twice before I rang, I was sitting in my bedroom with the number typed out into my phone, and I just thought to myself, you know, like, I'm not ringing this. It's more or less, you know, like, who is this person I'm ringing, and what's he going to think of me? Like, I'm a footballer, and is he just going to think I'm making a fuss over nothing? But the third time, thankfully, I pressed the green button on the phone, and the line went through, and I got the help I needed. And then three months of sort of counselling and hard work, I've gotten to a much better place. But there definitely is a stigma involved. It's stigmatised, all right. But since the article came out last week in the Sunday Independent, I've been absolutely blown away by the messages I've received. They're in their hundreds. People out there are willing to talk about this sort of stuff. So I initiated a conversation, and I was absolutely blown away by the reaction that I got and the feedback I got from it.
It's an incredibly brave thing for you to do, because it is a risk, because people might judge you. And you're standing up tall and you're speaking out.
Yeah, I suppose I would have, when I was going through all this, I mean, I write professionally, so I found it very therapeutic. That was sort of my way to try and get the voice to slow down in my head, because I was able to sit down and with the laptop, and I was just able to write down. I just start writing down the words that were flying around my head, and it just sort of, it did help me at the time. I found it very therapeutic, and I suppose back in March of this year, I broke my arm playing for Cavan in an Allianz League game against Sligo. And that obviously was a significant setback for myself. And I started slipping down again. I was feeling depressed for a while, but I went back and I went over reading the sort of stuff I'd been writing through the really bad patches, I like to call it, as when I just didn't understand it. And as I was going through it, I just thought to myself, I could really reach out and help someone here. I mean, the statistics don't lie. I mean, in Ireland, I think there's 10 people every week commit suicide, and 8 of those are male. And I just felt if by writing it, I could put context on it, because I remember lying in my bed on my laptop, and I was just sort of, I remember sitting down, I typed into Google, you know, am I feeling depressed? And the stuff comes up as very cold, and it's bullet points, and there's just nothing really, you can really relate to. And it's just, you look at a couple of points, and I'm thinking, yeah, I have that, maybe not that, and I have this. But I just decided that I wanted to just tell my story and just exactly what it felt like for me and what I went through, and hope that, look, if one person out there reads it and goes, actually, you know what, that's what I'm feeling like, I can go and get help for this, well, absolutely great, you know.
Alan, thank you so much for sharing your story with us today, sir.
No problem at all, Stephen. Thanks for having me.
Thanks a lot. Lovely to talk to you. Okay, 18 minutes past 10 o'clock, and I think it's the clarity with which Alan spoke there, and he has stood up tall, and he has definitely benefited from asking for help, and certainly with the documentary that I made, please ask for help if you feel that you need it.